Hey there, everybody. It is Wednesday, September 19th, 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line and send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. So much ground to cover on this week's show. Let's get started by welcoming our first guest. Matt Crabtree is the co-creator and executive producer of Failing Upwards, a new web series that we're going to talk all about. He's been in such feature films as Jamesy Boy and one of the best titled films of all time, The 41-Year-Old Virgin Who Knocked Up Sarah Marshall and Felt Super Bad About It. He's also been in a ton of TV shows, including the new David E. Kelly series, Monday Mornings as Dr. Gordon Willis. He's been on stage, and now he's coming back to This Show Is So Gay. Matt Crabtree, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back. I'm your first guest of the day.
You are the first guest of the day.
Oh, I open the show. I love opening shows.
Now, do you handle opening a show different than closing it?
Absolutely not.
Okay. I'm glad we covered that. Well, let's get right to it, because you were on the show before, and you were putting together Failing Upwards, but now it's like a thing that people can go and watch.
Finally, yes. I mean, it took several months to get it going. We did a great fundraiser, and thank you to all those, all of your listeners who contributed to it, and it was a labor of love for Michelle and I.
And so, what can folks do? They can go and watch it?
They can go and watch it. You can go to our website at failingupwardstheseries.com. You can go to YouTube and search Failing Upwards. There's so many different ways you can see it, and there's no excuse.
None.
For you not to be able to find it and see it.
Certainly not if someone says, I have a short attention span.
No, because the episodes themselves, including the credits, are less than 6 minutes. In between your, you know, in between your coffee breaks today when you're at work and you're like, oh, what do I need to do? I need to take a 5 minute break. You watch Failing Upwards.
That's what you do. That's what people should do during their breaks. So what will people see? Give us the rundown on Failing Upwards.
On Failing Upwards, it is our comedy about unemployment. We have a lot of people, you know, a lot of people in the country today who are unemployed. And I think a lot of them will be able to see the show and get some humor out of it. They may laugh and chuckle a little bit, saying this is kind of my life a little bit.
Yes.
But we actually take the series to a little more, not really absurd levels, but heightened, as it were.
And for This Show Is So Gay, tell us what is so gay about Failing Upwards.
What is so gay about Failing Upwards? Well, there's a lot of gay about Failing Upwards. There's a lot of the cast.
Yes.
Of Failing Upwards. There's a lot of gay in that cast. There's some bisexual in that cast. And there's some straight people in that cast.
That's so nice to let the straight people in.
We are an LGBT plus straight people show.
Nice. Nice. Now, we should talk about, you know, everybody's always looking for a catchphrase, and what's the catchphrase of a generation? You know, it used to be I Like Ike, and then it was Donna Martin Graduates. And I'm thinking that the catchphrase of our generation is going to be, and I quote, I'm a need a ride to the depot of homes.
I think it's going to catch on. I think it's going to go viral.
I'm a need a ride to the depot of homes. Where did that line come from?
That actually comes from episode one of Failing Upwards. That line came out of at the end of the episode. Well, I can't give you the episode away.
No, you can't.
The plot of it away. But that came from some really insane minds. Pip Lilly, who plays Pip in our show, it was very difficult to come up with his name.
Clearly.
For this series.
Clearly.
We were bantering around exactly how to use Home Depot, because we couldn't really use the word Home Depot because they're not supporting us yet.
Yet. Keyword yet. Yeah.
They will be when they see this. And it just came out one day, and we said that was just one of the most historical things we had heard. So it ended up in the empty tagline of our episode.
Love it.
And
love it.
End of the first episode.
Well, now there's a very special voiceover. Who does the voiceover saying previously on Failing Upwards?
Previously on Failing Upwards. I'm not real sure.
It's just brilliant.
Sounds good though, doesn't it?
What if that person were to say previously on This Show Is So Gay?
previously on this show, It's So Gay.
I'm totally using that every time. I mean, there's nothing to say. It's previously on this show, It's So Gay. We were gay. That's pretty much it. Well, that's very exciting. Did you volunteer for that little voiceover?
Well, I was actually, it's funny you said that. I was actually doing, there's a gay comic strip called Jason, written by Jeff Krell.
Okay.
And I had met Jeff in the 1990s in New York City. You know, back when I was 10.
You were 12. You were 12.
Okay, fine. 12. I was 12, and he just got a lot of graphic novels of Jason out there, and we were doing a presentation, an animated presentation of his comic series. And while we were in the booth, I was like, "Can we just hold off for two? Can I just say these couple of lines and you email them to me? Do we still have time in the booth?" So I actually used his dime in order to do the previously on Failing Upwards.
Love it. I love that.
It was gay leading into more gay.
Nice.
It was a day of gay.
Which equals, for those of you keeping score, that equals so gay. It's the whole premise of the show, Matt. It's what we do.
Oh, that's right.
Now, there is one scene in the second episode. There are two episodes that people can watch, and I certainly don't want to ruin a darn thing. But the group is engaged in a task, and the moment of truth comes along where they must see if they were successful at their task. And the camera pans to you, who stands up, gives this insane smile, and a thumbs up. For our radio audience, I was wondering if you could do that for us right now, because I think it's going to come through even on the radio.
Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready.
You have to give me the cue.
Okay.
Ready?
Ready? Yeah, it's even the intake and breath. We can feel it. We can feel it, Matt. I feel that you do that every day.
I do. I wake up every morning and thank heavens. Thank heavens I wake up every morning. And the good thing about episode two, also entitled Thumbs Up, I'm not going to give anything away.
There you go.
Is that we do have some eye candy. We have a lot of eye candy in this episode of episode two.
Michelle Bonilla.
Big eye candy. Like her. All those women love her. Pip Lilly, more eye candy.
Love it.
Deidre Edwards, lots of it. And then we have two day laborers. Oliver Goodwill and Rafael Zurita.
They've been to the gym.
They work out.
They work out.
I at some point, I think I tried to get them shirtless in the episode.
I'm not going to lie. I assumed that's where the episode was going.
You know what? We tried. I tried. My business partner and I were discussing it, and it was vetoed.
You were making a pros and deltas little spreadsheet there.
Had it been women, I think Michelle Bonilla would have said, "All right, let's do it." But they were guys. I think there's a little sexism in there somewhere.
and there's a bit of a Norma Desmond role there in episode two as well.
Stephanie Erb is amazing as our Norma. Of course, we call her Norma Desmond, but not that we're using Norma Desmond.
No, not at all.
Norma, she's a very eccentric woman. And has some fantastic moments in our show.
There really is. I'm just thinking about it. There's no excuse for people not to watch this. It takes no time, and it's extraordinarily entertaining.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We're having a great. We're almost finished with episode three now, which will air in 2 weeks because we air them every 2 weeks to coincide with when you normally fill out your unemployment forms. But for those of you on unemployment out there. Here in California, it's every 2 weeks. So.
I did not know that. I did not know that. And in fact, I did some research on Failing Upwards. This is like an actual thing. This is a whole phenomenon. I did research on it. There are reasons. I'm going to read to you. There are reasons that range from the nature of corporate culture, which tends to rely on its own, to the American belief in second chances and focus on short-term success. It's like a real thing.
It is a real thing. Especially here in Los Angeles, it's been very interesting because I've heard that term for years now, and it is, especially in this business, you have people who are above you, as it were, in executive positions or just in your normal jobs, who aren't really qualified to be there. They
right.
get lucky, and they get lucky and they get their job. Now, are they really not that smart to have that job, or are they smart enough to have the job because they keep really great people directly below them.
Right.
To make them look good.
I read this quote. This is Ken Siegel, the president of the Impact Group, which is an organizational consulting group. He said, quote, "It happens much more frequently than anyone cares to acknowledge." And then I love this. This is so gay in itself. "Typically, people promote people they like. It's a derivative of promoting yourself. It has nothing to do with how well you perform." Look how we all learn together there.
We all learn together. This is not just a gay show. This is an educational
show. Isn't it, though? Now, there is also, if people wanted to watch some outtakes, that's available to them.
Yes, we've done outtakes for episode one that we released last week. We're going to release outtakes for episode two this coming week, and who knows what's going to come up on that.
Well, I must say that on the outtakes for episode one, I certainly don't want to be critical or accusatory, but if I can take a second to be critical and accusatory, you made out pretty well there on the outtakes.
I did. You know, I'm very professional. But no, there will be a few coming up, I'm sure, that will show Matt's true colors in there somewhere.
So what kind of episode run are we shooting for?
We have a 6-episode run, our first full season, 6 episodes. And our last episode, our season finale, is going to include Taya Gill, which we're very excited about.
Nice.
And that episode six, will be November 12th. So just put that on your calendar. And our next episode, episode 3, has the wonderful Gerald McCulloch from CSI, Bear City.
Of course.
And he came in and I had such a good time playing with him on set. I've been friends for years, and we said, "Can you come do this?" And without hesitation, he said yes, not knowing what he was going to get himself into.
Now he's in his safe place.
I think we're still friends. I'm not sure. We'll have to see what happens in 2 weeks when episode 3 comes out on October 1st.
It's good to check in about friendships every now and then.
It is.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the medium, though, because web series are certainly all the rage, but it's a very different medium than the other mediums you've done of television and the movies and the stage. Are there certain awards that are given? I don't even know this, because I feel like I should know the medium much better, seeing as how many web series I watch. Are there awards that are given just to web series that you can apply for?
There are. I mean, there's so many different. There's you know, things called the Webby Awards, the
okay.
Streamy Awards. There's the ITV Film Festival. And a lot of film festivals nowadays will also include web series. And so that helps, you know, give us a little more acknowledgement, as it were, for
yeah.
the work that we've done. And then, because the reason we created Filling Upwards is to, first of all, create work for ourselves. As actors, we're always in between jobs. We're
right.
always, you know, we may work one day on something, then we have two weeks off before our next thing. So to keep the creativity going, we decided to create characters that we typically are not allowed to play on television
yeah.
for whatever reason. So that gives us that creative freedom to, especially as with Michelle and I, we created it, we executive produced it, we starred in it, and we brought someone into our friend Joe Camerano, came in to direct it for us. But it just gives us, you know, because we actually want to use this to show other people and have people see this and say, you know what, this would make a great 22-minute, half-hour single-camera comedy. So let's bring them in. Let's talk to them. Are they, you know, they're not just actors. They also write, and they're able to produce, and they understand how the business works. So
right.
that we're kind of trying to up our pedigree a little bit.
And if Home Depot were to call and say, we want to sponsor the web series, you wouldn't say no.
Well, no, I wouldn't say no. I had to think about that for a second.
It's good to take processing time, too.
There is Home Depot. You can't just jump in and say yes immediately.
Right.
You may miss out on Osh Hardware.
Right. Right. Because then Kohl's calls and you're like, oh, crap, we already mm-hmm. committed. We already made a commitment.
Right, right. We don't want to do that. We have to, you know, weigh our options.
All right. Tell everyone again where they can go to watch Failing Upwards.
You can go to our website, failingupwardstheseries.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at failing_upwards. And you can find all this stuff on our website, on our Facebook page. And we would love to see you. And give us a little shout-out and say, you actually heard Matt on This Show Is So Gay with Ken.
Oh, that would be great.
That would be great. And we'll do a little cross-promotion, Ken.
We love cross-promotion.
We'll do what they call a Celebrity 69. You post post us on your site, we will post you on our site.
It's that time of show where I get to consult with the FCC and find out what I have to bleep and what I have to not bleep. So we'll find
out.
Will you tell Michelle Bonilla that we here at This Show So Gay miss her tremendously?
I will, and you have to have her on your show soon, too.
Well, we're never going to turn that down. And can we do just one more encore performance? When I say ready, you know what to do, okay?
All right, here we go. I have to prepare.
Okay.
An actor prepares. Okay.
Ready? It's that intake. I just love it every time. Folks, you now know where to go. Failing Upwards, so immensely entertaining. Matt Crabtree, we can't wait to see more from you guys.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to show you more.
Fantastic. All the best, Matt.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Love is not proud. Love does not boast. Love, after all, matters the most. Love does not run. Love does not hide. Love does not keep locked inside. Love is a river that flows through, and love never fails you. Love will sustain.
All right, everybody, and we are back. Well, you loyal listeners know that one of my favorite things to do with This Show Is So Gay over the past 4 years is to highlight amazing efforts to raise up voices that are not currently being heard. And this week, I'm honored to welcome Antoine Craigwell, who is here to tell us about DBGM, a 3-in-1 project that focuses on raising awareness, changing, and saving lives. Antoine, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you very much, Ken. It's an honor. It's a pleasure. Thank you very much again.
What the heck does DBGM stand for?
DBGM is very simple. Depressed Black Gay Man.
What can we do to help depressed Black Gay Men?
There are a number of Black Gay Men who are committing suicide in traditional and non-traditional forms.
Okay.
And when they commit suicide, perhaps in the traditional form, it is very often not reported as a suicide. But the trend is seeing people are committing suicide in non-traditional forms. And non-traditional forms take the practice of death by cop.
Okay.
Or placing yourself in a dangerous situation where you could get killed. So it's death by proxy.
Yeah.
So somebody else doing it. Or the most common is that there are still several people who prefer to engage in unsafe sex and contract HIV as a form of suicide.
So there is quite a bit of work, then, you are saying, to do with depressed Black gay men.
Yes. More so, it is a matter of tackling this issue from a number of different perspectives. One is encouraging an individual, a young Black gay man or a Black gay man anywhere along the age spectrum, to realize that his experience of depression, if he's experiencing depression, he's not alone.
Okay.
First, he's not alone. Second, it's treatable. Third, most importantly, he is not to be blamed for that, because there are a number of biological as well as environmental factors that play into and contribute to his depression.
Yeah.
So he's not to be blamed for it, and he should not blame himself. The other side of it, the other prong in addressing the issue of depression, is looking at, let us say, the environmental factors, or what is called exogenous factors.
Yes.
And so we want to look at stigma and discrimination and sexual and gender identity and homophobia. We want to be able to address those specific issues, how people relate to another person, how you feel belonged or how you feel accepted, or how your mother will respond to you when she finds out that you may be gay.
Right.
Okay? The other thing we want to look at is paying attention to raising the awareness of the prevalence of sexual abuse of boys. And a number in the Black community, there are a number of young Black boys who have been sexually abused.
Yeah.
And they live with the pain and the silence for all their lives. And some can't help it. Some end up taking their lives. Some become alcoholics. Some get married and they end up abusing their wives or, you know, repeating the same behavior because they think this is normal behavior.
Right.
There's also, you know, reaching into the churches and saying to the churches, you, how can you be demonizing someone who has a same-sex relationship when your very God says to you to love your neighbor as yourself?
Right.
Okay? So how can you be demonizing and making someone feel less than a part of the human family when your religion itself and says that you must, that we are all part of the same human family? And the fourth aspect, as I mentioned earlier, is addressing the issue of HIV.
Mm.
Because one of the least talked about factors right now is the mental health component of an HIV infection. Okay? And let's say, as I said earlier, someone who's feeling insecure, unconcerned about his circumstances or about himself, a low self-esteem, is going to place himself in a situation where he will have unprotected sex and not care about it.
Right.
And so he will contract HIV. But when he contracts the HIV virus, the virus itself, as research has shown, has an affinity for the human brain. It crosses the blood-brain barrier and targets the nerves eating through the myelin sheath, that nerve, the insulation for the nerves, eats through that and exposes it. And then that exposure causes a destabilization in the basic neurochemicals that regulate mood. So someone who is already dealing with depression, then contracts HIV, will descend into a deeper depression. And as research has pointed out, that there is someone who does not take medication soon after contracting HIV is likely to develop a form of what is called HIV-associated dementia.
Right.
And so they start losing, you know, daily function, forgetting stuff. You know, basic functions, they start not be, and then descending into deeper depression. So, and then on the other side of that, you have the stigma that and the discrimination that is still associated with HIV.
Right.
So you hear about places in the South that are still talking about contracting HIV from somebody's spoon.
Absolutely.
You know, eating after somebody's spoon or sitting on the same toilet or shaking somebody's hand because of the ignorance and the lack of education, the lack of information, the stigma and the discrimination still persists. So someone who is now HIV positive is going to suppress that knowledge, is going to keep it hidden and suffer in silence because they are afraid of revealing it for fear of alienation. But yet, and the fifth and final component of this that we are looking at is all the black gay men, all those older black gay men who've lived through the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, or 80s, and are growing old, they're getting into their 50s, 40s, late 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. What kind of life and quality of life do they have?
Right.
Many of them are now, many of them are now returned, as we call it, twice silent. They were silent when they were young in the towns and the cities where they lived, and they fled to the big metropolises so they can create some kind of identity and be who they feel they want to be. But then as they get older, they either return to living by themselves because their social networks and friends have all shrunken or died or moved away. Their health is compromised. There's a huge generation gap. And if they are so fortunate that they have the means and they're in a assisted living facility or a nursing home or wherever, they are now back among some of their contemporaries who still maintain the homophobia from years past. So for their own survival, what they have to do is to literally go back in the closet just so that they can survive with everybody else in the common room.
Right.
And so that is causing a lot of older black gay men to feel stressed, to feel depressed. And then overwhelmingly over all this, you've got the inherent disdain, dislike, and mistrust of anything medical, let alone anything psychological.
Right.
So there are all these preventives that are impediments or objections in the way of a black gay man getting the help that he needs.
Well, let's just do a very human level. I mean, what you've just outlined, and we try so hard on, even on this show, to make the commitment to talk about the intersection between race and sexual orientation. And sometimes it's really difficult because, as you said, these issues, that intersection just doesn't get the media coverage that other issues get.
It's not relevant. It's not sensationalist enough.
Right. So how do we take everything that you've just outlined, which, if you'll permit me, you could hear all that and just think, my gosh, that's just, it's too overwhelming. I feel incapacitated to make any change. But you are setting out there, you and many like you, with energy to make positive changes. How do you not get incapacitated by all this? How do you turn this into creating change?
For me personally, I remember back in 1999, standing on the edge of a platform in New York City and watching the subway train roll into the station.
Okay.
And thinking, what it'd be like if I were to just fall off the edge of this.
Hmm.
Because there was a whole lot of stuff that was going on in my life. I don't normally talk about this.
Yeah.
But however, several years have come along, and I've been hearing and meeting people, young black gay men, older black gay men, and I've been hearing the recurring theme. I've been hearing their stories and realizing that there was nothing happening.
Yeah.
That they could not find any resource, they could not find any help, and they were literally floundering in a sea that was taking them wherever the wind blew.
Right.
And I'm a journalist by trade, and I said, well, let me just do an article about mental illness or depression in black gay men, and I started to do some research, and I could find nothing. And I was like, but then what is a black gay man to do? What is a man who is black and gay, who's dealing with depression, what is he to do? Who can he turn to? What can he look up or read? So I decided, let me put my journalistic abilities to work here. Let me bring my objectivity. Let me bring my training. Let me bring my research. Let me bring all of that into this and write a book about it.
Yeah.
And as I've written the book, I've written the book proposal, and because it's a nonprofit book, it's now languishing, waiting on somebody to help me, you know, to pick it up.
Of course.
That I can work with, because I really want to get this book out. I've interviewed more than 40 black gay men from the Caribbean, from United States, and from Africa. I've interviewed a number of prominent people, but nobody wants to pick it up. Nobody's interested.
Right.
So I thought to myself, well, since we are all visual people as well, why don't I see if I can find some of these black gay men who share their stories with me, some of them in confidence because of issues that still persist, or, you know, for people that are still alive, who will be willing to go in front of a camera and talk about their stories, talk about their experiences, and break the silence, break that taboo in the black community that you don't talk your business out.
Right.
And I have had 17 interviews with black gay men and mental health professionals and people from the community, including one of the few out black gay imams.
Mm.
So I've had an interview with him talking about what it means to be black, gay, and Muslim. We're just about to complete this documentary. And the legendary film, its director, Stanley Bennett Clay, came on board and was willing to direct a documentary for us. And we are just about to complete it. We are in post-production, and we intend to be premiering the documentary on November 17th.
So exciting!
We're premiering it on November 17th at the Audubon Ballroom, ironically, where Malcolm X was assassinated.
Wow.
In New York City. And it is just going to be incredible because I haven't seen the production.
Okay.
I haven't seen any of the footage, and I refuse to look at it until the night when I should see it for the first time.
Yeah.
Because I did some of the interviews on camera. And Ken, I will tell you, when some of these guys sat in front of me looking at me and the camera is right over my shoulder, and they're telling their story, I am crying.
Oh, I bet. Okay. I bet.
We had an interview with a mother from Beltsville, Maryland.
Okay.
whose 15-year-old son committed suicide in his bedroom.
Aye.
And she sat in front of us, and she talked about what it is like to be a black woman, a mother whose only son committed suicide because he was bullied at school, because he was different, because he was not accepted.
Right.
And when she was done her interview, Ken, there was not a dry eye on that set.
How could there be? Unbelievable. Well, and one of the great things that you all do are these community conversations. And I was looking over the list of all of the different places that you had these community discussions all over the New York City area and certainly extended beyond that. And I love that there is a really lovely combination of community gathering places and bringing in faith, because faith is such an aspect to this, faith and religion, as you were mentioning. Those community conversations, I'm assuming you had just different people every time, did you not?
Yeah, because one of the things that we do is that when we go to different communities, what we try to do is to bring people from those communities into the discussion forum.
Yeah.
Because it is those people who have to relate to and relate with
right.
their own people from that community.
Right.
So wherever we go, we ask and we try to get people from that community to come and be on the panel. And it begins with a presentation, but then it evolves into an open discussion where the panelists themselves engage with the audience. And the audience get to ask questions and give feedback and make comments. And it becomes a learning and information, a place where if you're black and gay and you've been struggling with depression, that you can begin to realize that I am not so all alone after all.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, we have people listening all over the country, all over the world. What can people do? You know, we're always trying to take these conversations and turn them into action. What can people actually do? Give us some tips to really raise up these individuals who are struggling.
Well, I would say first of all, like you said, there are people who are listening to this show from all over the world and all over the country, that while I am focusing on depression in black gay men, I just presented an abstract. I just did a post exhibition at the International AIDS Conference on HIV and depression in black gay men.
Gotcha.
And a number of people came up to me from across the world asking me questions about it, because the issue of depression and HIV is not exclusive to black gay men.
No, of course not.
It applies to all those people all over the world.
Yes.
Similarly, the issue of depression is not exclusive to black gay men. It affects millions of people all over the world. As a matter of fact, the World Health Organization says that by the year 2020, depression is likely to become the second leading cause of illness in the world.
Wow.
We know here in the United States that 1 in 5 black gay men is dealing with depression. We also know here in the United States that 1 in 3 black gay men with HIV is dealing with depression. And we know that according to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, about every 9.5 minutes, someone somewhere in the United States commits suicide.
Yes.
However, what this asks of us is very simple and fundamental. And that is that if you perceive someone who is going through a rough time, take the time to stop and ask, how can I help you? Is there anyone that you want me to talk to? Do you want me to put you in touch with someone?
Mm-hmm.
What would be important for your listeners to understand is to look up the DSM-4 has at least 9 different criteria for determining whether someone is dealing with depression.
Right.
And that's major depression. If any one person, one of your listeners, is experiencing any one of those, you need to find a therapist, find somebody to go and talk to, and trust, because the therapist cannot repeat what is said to him or her.
Indeed.
Unless it is in the commission of a crime, it is the reporting of a crime, or there is an intent for you to harm yourself or harm others. But other than that, the therapist is bound to respect and regard and keep what you say confidential. Secondly, if there is someone who is experiencing any one of those symptoms, any one of those issues, let them realize, first and foremost, that you're not to be blamed for this, that it is that you are not alone.
Right.
That there are many people who have shared your experience and have lived and have survived. And you are precious, you are valuable, and you have immense potential that you can act on and unleash and realize. And all you have to do is simply trust someone, tell someone you do not feel like yourself, that you think you need to speak to someone professionally,
mm-hmm.
and ask their help how to find someone. The final and most important component to this entire process is that we need to identify mental health professionals who are culturally competent to address the mental health needs of those who come to them.
So important.
A number of mental health professionals have been trained in the Freudian Western European psychoanalytic paradigm, but are not very many have taken it upon themselves to become socially and culturally aware and competent of their clientele.
Right.
So, for example, there are many black mental health professionals who do not know how to relate to other black men or other black women or other black people.
Yeah.
Similarly, on the flip side, there are some white mental health professionals who have made it their business to go and learn, to go and live in black communities, to go to the Caribbean and live in certain Caribbean countries,
mm-hmm.
to go to Africa so that they can understand where, when people come to them for help, how to respond, how to deal with them. And that is the most crucial thing right now.
So important.
That mental health professionals become more culturally competent and aware. Because there's no point, one of the things that we say to at our discussion groups, we encourage people, is that when you go to see a therapist, you need to interview your therapist as much as your therapist interviews you. You need to find out from your therapist how culturally aware
mm-hmm.
is that therapist to address issues of you as a black person. How culturally competent or aware is your therapist to address, or how comfortable is the therapist with you being black and gay? Because there still are some therapists who don't really want to have anything to do with anybody who's homosexual or lesbian.
Oh, yeah.
So that is also another aspect of the cultural competency, not just racial cultural competency, but societal cultural competency as well.
Yes. Oh, that's so important. Because if you don't have that supportive presence, the fact that someone is taking that step to go get help, which so many people fall short of doing that, but to finally make that commitment to go and seek someone out to find support and find that that person is not supporting a really healthy transition for you, it's almost more damaging than not looking for help to begin with.
Precisely. And so then what happens is that person who is now taking that huge step to go out gets disillusioned.
Yeah.
Is disappointed.
Yeah.
He says, you know what? I don't have time with therapists because therapists don't understand me. Therapists don't know how to talk to me. So, and they just step out again.
Right. Right.
Now, one of the things that is important is that the reason why this is such a strong issue and such an important issue, especially for black gay men, is from the racial perspective, is that as a black man, you're already coming into the world two steps behind.
Right.
As a black gay man, are you late for work every day? Have you been able to keep a job?
Mm-hmm.
What is your relationships like with your family, with close friends? Are you able to stay in relationships? Are you able to maintain relationships? Okay, these are all telltale signs to look out for.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, we have so much work to do, Antoine. We have so much work to do. Well, give everybody the website that they should be checking out so that they can keep on top of all the really just incredible conversations and projects that DBGM is putting out there.
Well, we will welcome everyone to go to our website. It's www.projectdbgm.com. And again, it's Project, D as in David, B as in Boy, G as in God, M as in Man. .com. And there we have our save the date for our event coming up on November 17th. where we hope to premiere the documentary.
Yes.
And one of the other things that we are doing at this reception, the reception that precedes the premiere, is that we are inviting, we are putting a call out to black gay artists all over the country to submit their work to a panel who will select about between 8 to 16 artists, print, photography, and sculpture, to come and show their work at the reception.
Oh, boy.
What we are doing is that any of the artists who are selected, will, there's no admissions charge, there's no registration fee, and if that artist has a piece of work that someone wants to buy, that artist gets 100% of the value.
Look at that.
And very simply, the reason for this is very simple. First of all, we know that a number of black gay men do extremely creative and incredible work.
Absolutely.
As artists. But very often they do not get a chance to show it. So we are giving them an opportunity and a platform. Second, we know that a number of people, and we can look back at some of our masters in art, and we can see that a number of artists represent, express themselves through their work, and many are dealing with depression, and their depression, creating art, doing art, is their expression, is their way to remain with us.
Oh, it's their salvation, absolutely.
And third,
yes,
is that we know that times are hard, and we know that a number of black gay men are either underemployed or unemployed. And whatever art they do, they are doing it because it is, again, their expression.
Yeah.
But they may be struggling to live on a day-to-day basis. And every day is one more struggle to get up in the morning to move on with the next day. And so whatever they get for that painting or for that piece of art, offer that piece of sculpture, it's theirs.
Great. Well, I have to tell you, I normally have this big speech at the end about each guest, but it really just comes down to you are doing life-saving work. It really is. This is life-saving work. We can decry all we want that the media only covers the salacious stories and the underrepresentation of gay men of color in the media and with our national organizations just all over the map is so low. But saying that doesn't do anything. You are actually doing the work that is, to use your words, so precious and so valuable and ultimately so life-saving. I'm so excited for your November 17th night. I know it's going to be just such a celebration.
Well, you'd be just as welcome to come. Just let me know.
I will let you know. Antoine, you're going to keep doing this work?
Yes.
Of course.
Also, just another reason why we choose the weekend before Thanksgiving is, I mean, everything here is laden with symbolism.
Yes.
Is usually around holidays, people who are black gay men, particularly who are estranged from their families.
Oh, it's a bad
who are
time.
Disconnected.
Yeah.
Feel the effects of that familial belonging. And so this gives us an opportunity to bring black gay men together who would otherwise be alone and say to them, this is an opportunity where you can be among some of your own kind and feel accepted and belong here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And this is our second benefit. Last year we did it. We're doing it again this year. And I'm at a loss to think what I'm going to do for next year to top this year.
Well, why don't we just stick with this year for now? Well, why don't we just focus on this year for now? Let's not think about next year. Let's go to November 17th and get everybody to show up.
Oh, but we do, but we also have to think of next year.
Oh, okay, fine. We want everybody to go to projectdbgm.com, and we're going to link to it on our website. Everyone, check out this work. It is life-saving work. Antoine Craigwell, what an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. You're going to keep us posted on all the great things that you're doing?
Yes, thank you very much, Ken. Yes, I am really and truly honored to be able to share with your listeners what we are doing, what DBGM is doing.
It's huge. Huge. So important. Antoine, all the best. Tell everyone we say hi, and let's everybody go over to the website, and let's make it down to New York City on November 17th.
Thank you.
Thank you, Antoine. All right, folks, and we are back. Jody Clark, you have not been on this show since 2008.
Or August.
It seems like 2000. Was it August? It seems like a really long time.
It has been a really long time.
Is there anything so gay in your life that you would like to discuss?
Let's see. Oh, yes. I went to this fantastic bowling alley in Shelburne Falls, Mass.
What is a lesbian bowling alley?
It is a bowling alley that is owned by a lesbian couple who are really, really amazingly awesome.
Okay.
That is what it is.
All right.
At least that's what this one was.
Were there any straight people there at the bowling alley?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who let them in?
They let themselves in,
All right.
Think.
Well, that's not really a lesbian bowling alley, then, is it?
It is owned by them. And it
I
is
want
very
separate but equal. There are so many stories that we have to talk about, and by that I mean there are four stories we need to talk about. Are you ready?
Yeah.
So one of the themes of this week is people who are working really hard to take away rights that have already been given.
That's lame.
Isn't it lame?
It's lame.
As we've discussed previously many times on this show, it is one thing if your state does not have gay marriage and some people are trying to get gay marriage in your state and you are fighting against there being gay marriage in your state. It is quite another thing if your state has gay marriage and you're fighting to take it away.
Yeah.
Yes. So there was a big story this week, a lot of stories, because this is the 1 year anniversary of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So mm-hmm. 1 year ago, President Obama signed the legislation taking away Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And after a year, there are essentially no consequences.
None. No. Well, at least no negative.
No negative consequences.
At all. Yeah.
But there are marriages on bases, and someone got to pin someone else with a pin of the same sex, and all these really, really
so
lovely
great
stories. But now you have people who are coming out and saying, it is a priority of mine if I get elected to get Don't Ask, Don't Tell back.
That's stupid.
Well, given other things they could be focusing on, I would say so. So in an interview with Think Progress at the Values Voter Summit on Friday, Representative Jim Jordan, who is a Republican from Ohio, said he, quote, certainly supports going back to the previous policy of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He left open the possibility that those service members who have already come out of the closet, that they would be discharged from the military if Don't Ask, Don't Tell is reinstated.
He's dumb.
Well, it's just in terms of priorities. Again, it's like if you're debating about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and you are someone who's in favor of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I could see you saying, no, leave it the way it is. But once they enact the legislation that gets rid of it and now there is undoubtedly more equality.
Right.
To then fight to get it back is just a bad use of time. I would
yes
think there's a time management issue there.
Yes, time, project management, perhaps
yeah
even. Yes, and also, what else is going on in his state that's being ignored that's actually a problem?
Nothing. Ohio's good. They are
They're,
good
are
to
they perfect?
Go. Yes,
oh, okay.
They have solved the economy.
Oh.
And currently, the rankings in reverse order. So in terms of global economy, it's number 3, United States,
uh-huh.
number 2, China,
uh-huh.
and number 1, Ohio.
Wow.
Yes, they really solved it all.
Oh, so they have plenty of time to worry about things that are not problems.
Which they also have time to be doing this in Nebraska.
Oh.
An attempt to repeal Omaha's legal protections for gay and transgender residents is underway. A move that could inject the contentious issue into next year's city election. A group calling itself the, we love this, the Omaha Liberty Project, which is anything but,
yeah.
they filed a petition request with the city of Omaha this week seeking to put the city's expanded anti-discrimination protection to a public vote. Because it always works out
when
you put minority rights to a public majority vote.
Yeah.
City legal officials are reviewing the proposed petition, a step that could be completed early next week. And then if they pass it, it would roll back some of the civil liberties that have been granted there in Omaha.
Mm.
This is what they have time to do.
Because apparently they solve
the
obesity epidemic.
Oh, yes.
Because that's why they have all that time.
Yes. The council's 4-3 vote gave lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in Omaha the ability to file complaints with the city's human rights and relations department if they were fired from a job because of their orientation, suffered other workplace discrimination, or were somehow refused a public accommodation. So that's what would be rolled back if the Omaha Liberty Project, also known as OLP. OLP. That's just fun. Something gets caught in your throat. It's like, oop. That's going to be the new This Show Is So Gay sound effect.
Ooh.
Anytime someone does something silly, we say,
oop.
Oop. So that's that. Now, I have been, this is kind of the story that I wanted to lead with and end with and talk about all through the middle, but I figured we had to talk about other things too.
Mm-hmm.
Rupert Everett. You know Rupert Everett?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look, that was he's in pop culture and you know who he is.
He's in movies.
I see
movies. I go to movie theaters.
No, but he's in color movies.
Yes.
I did not know you've seen movies in color. So Rupert Everett, who's been in Shakespeare in Love and My Best Friend's Wedding and got all this press for being this out gay actor, which is great.
Yeah.
But he also says things sometimes. He says things that are not so positive. So he told Britain's Sunday Times magazine that his mother has met his boyfriend, but, quote, still wishes I had a wife and kids.
Mm-hmm.
He said, quote, she thinks children need a father and mother, and I agree with her. I can't think of anything worse than being brought up by two gay dads.
Ooh.
Some people might not agree with that. Fine, that's just my opinion. Adding that he doesn't consider himself part of the, quote, gay community. It stings so much more.
Mm.
It stings so much more when it's someone in the community. The president of GLAAD said, quote, since Everett shared his outdated opinion, gay parents as well as their friends and families have voiced overwhelming disappointment. Children aren't hurt when raised by caring gay parents, but they are when uninformed people in the public eye insult their families.
And
It is painful when a gay person says it. It is, and I hate, and maybe that's really biased of me to say, but when the gay person says it, it just hurts so much more.
And I can only imagine that maybe his gay friends, he would never want them to be his parents. Like, maybe that's why he said that.
He's saying now, quote, since this came out and people are questioning on him, he has followed up by saying, quote, I'm very out of kilter with the rest of the world, I realize, but, you know, I'm just an individual. I'm not trying to sell anything, and I don't want to upset anyone, and I'm not trying to have an official opinion about anything. Which I think, end quote, before I move on to my opinion, end quote, which I think is a totally irresponsible thing to say. Because, first of all, he is trying to sell something. He's in the business of selling things, and he does have official opinions. People look up to him. He's put himself out there in that way. He made a choice. He made a choice, and unless he's going to be like one of these kind of Johnny Depp recluse people who don't have an opinion about anything, then once you express an opinion, you're out there, dude.
And it's official.
And it's official. And people look up to you. It hurts. This one hurts. Clint Eastwood, who's talking to an empty freaking chair, came out and he was on Ellen this week and said, just in his very libertarian way, when she asked him about gay marriage and about that empty chair, weirdest thing I've ever seen, he at least said, everyone should just be able to do whatever they want. Clint Eastwood talking to an empty chair at the Republican National Convention is outpacing Rupert Everett. And he knows he's got an official
Ugh, that just annoys me.
It's,
that annoys me. All right.
Yes.
So that's Rupert Everett, who does not speak for the rest of us. And,
no.
But he is. And it was a big deal. When he came out, that was big.
I know.
That was like
huge.
A leading man big.
I know.
And now we're supposed to disavow him, which, I don't know, just doesn't feel right. In Delaware, a church that has provided, I don't know how I feel about this. A church that has provided a meeting place for the local Boy Scout troop for 4 decades, which one could argue is 40 years,
indeed,
has dropped its ties with the Scouts over its recently reaffirmed stance against openly gay troop leaders and Scouts. Hmm. The Silverside Church in Wilmington, Delaware will allow Troop 70, also known as the Peacemakers, to convene at their space until they find a new meeting ground. Scout executive Jason Pierce, director of the Delaware, Maryland, Virginia Council is helping the troop find a new space, but says no other space sponsors in his jurisdiction have dropped out after the Boy Scouts reestablished its long-held ban on gay people. What stinks about this is that it's the local troops that suffer, even though I support that.
Right.
And I wonder how much there should be some way that I guess a local troop can opt out of the stance espoused by, it's kind of like the Chick-fil-A thing, where individual Chick-fil-A's are saying, we are not affiliated with the rest of Chick-fil-A, even though... Yeah, you are.
You are, because are part of the
chain. I don't have that story in front of me, but apparently Chick-fil-A has stopped giving money to anti-gay causes. So we should celebrate them and go get waffle fries.
I don't want waffle fries.
They're so good.
They will
and
make
now
me
they're
sick.
Not anti-gay.
They so will make me ill. Can't have that kind of grease anymore.
So that's going on there in Delaware. And then in Oklahoma, we're covering a lot of different states.
We are. We're all over the place.
An Oklahoma judge has made a decision that transgender people should not be allowed to change their names legally, claiming that they are making the changes for, quote, fraudulent purposes in violation of state law. Oklahoma County District Judge Bill Graves, a former state legislator, has also cited the Bible in disavowing the name changes, which I thought you couldn't do that.
I thought you couldn't do that either. That's a violation, I believe.
Apparently not. In Oklahoma, who has also, like Nebraska and Ohio, solved all the world's issues. Mm. Other judges told the newspaper they routinely grant name changes for people who have undergone or are planning to have gender reassignment procedures. In an order last year denying a name change, Graves wrote, quote, a so-called sex change surgery can make one appear to be the opposite sex, but in fact they are nothing more than an imitation of the opposite sex. To grant a name change in this case would be to assist in that which is fraudulent. It is notable that Genesis 1:27 through 28 states, quote, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God created him, male and female created he them, and God blessed them, and God said unto them, this is the longest Bible I've ever read here, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. The DNA code shows, this is not from the Bible now, the DNA code shows God meant for them to stay male and female.
Wow.
I didn't know you could cross the Bible and judicial law in such a blatant way.
I don't think you actually can. I think he's...
In Oklahoma, you can.
I think somebody should do something to tell him he can't do that.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We're going to keep our eyes on that.
Yeah.
All right, and that's our news roundup. That's our quick little news roundup. We don't have a lot of time.
No.
We've got other things to get to.
I know, we do.
A lot of exciting things happening on this show, So Gay, coming up, including a new recording device that Jody and I are going to figure out, but we couldn't figure out for today. So you just get the normal way for now.
The snowball.
We're going to try out the snowball. It's very gay, and that sounds really seedy, and I'm not going to go there right now.
No.
No. So we have amazing guests coming up. You should, of course, go over to this show, SoGay.com. And read about the amazing guests coming up, including Dr. Ronnie Sandlow, who is just a hero in the field of LGBT education. So she's going to be on the show in a couple weeks. We have other amazing people coming up. Stacey Ann Chin, who is just one of the most amazing slam poets around. So she'll be coming up as well. You should, of course, send us an email. If you're really annoyed about anything that you've heard, please send an email on over to Jody@thisshowsogay.com. If you love what you've heard, please send it on over to Ken@thisshowsogay.com. And of course, go to Facebook. We're nearing like 3,000 people.
Ooh,
all of a sudden. We really shot up in a crazy, crazy way. So go to Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. That wraps things up for this week's show. Thank you to all of our guests. Thank you to Jody.
Thank you, Ken.
And let's get out there and go do some incredible things. And while you're doing them, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?